think we are now going to start with our visit. Before we proceed, can we quickly take a round of introduction? My name is Dorothy Ramudile, the chairperson of this Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. My name is Muntu Mumalo, member of the committee. I thank you.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. I'm Helen de Mula, member of the Swati Western Cape.
Morning. I'm Ibisen Celia Gizatelo, also a member in the committee.
Good morning. My name is Krista Gay, the member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Colin Seaman, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Bolsa. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Connie Diem, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, my name is Lady Sonobatana, I'm the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Kashfa Agus, the research of the committee.
Good morning, Crystal Levendale of the research of the committee.
Good morning, Diana Boisa, DNG.
My name is Martin Mapisa. I'm from the National Department of Human Settlements. I'm a Deputy Director General responsible for Policy, Governance, and Advisory Services. And I'm a leader of the delegation this morning. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lita Jorobe. I'm also from the National Department of Human Settlements in Branch Policy and Framework. I'm heading a chief directorate called Advisory Services. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Charles Ngetua from Sector Transformation in the Department of National Department of Human Settlements.
My name is Chairman members. My name is Temba Novatana. I'm from the Office of Director General, Chief Director Executive Support.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Sean Solon from the National Department of Human Settlements, based in the Office of the DG. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I have an apology of the two people. The first one is our Director General. He's at another meeting, because this meeting is last. That's why he delegated me. The second one is the member of the delegation, Mrs. Sitisho Ramuka. She can arrive anytime. She lost her luggage in the plane and she went out to cut some clothing this morning. Yes, she should be with us any moment. Apology on her behalf, please. Thank you.
I think that's where we can start. Maybe they'll be able to tell us why. Thank you very much for the introduction. My member there actually preempted me because I was still expecting some ladies to come in, and I was saying, oh, is it because they deal with the, you know, building of houses where they believe that women cannot build houses, that is why they are not even represented, you know, in their delegation. But on a serious note, let me once more welcome you, and hope that we will be able to get from yourself the information or responses regarding issues and concerns that were raised by stakeholders, the NGO civil society, during our public hearing on the implementation on the Convention of the Right of persons with disabilities. We are aware that this is a target group, you know, that is mostly neglected. Hence, we had to hear from and just give them a hearing to hear as to what are the challenges. And thereafter, after to engage with various departments to establish as to the progress and the challenges regarding the implementation of this convention. And without wasting any time, I will then hand over to you to present, to take from. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. In my presentation today, I will be assisted by my delegation, but I will run briefly through the slides. And in providing for our beneficiaries, we use a community approach. The process will be something like in a summarized way. We register all the housing demand data, housing demand on a housing database using our ID system. And when we plan for a settlement, we'll then identify special needs from all the applicants. The special needs might not be only for people with disability. There might also be other variations that might impact on the construction within built environment. Like if a location is a steep slope, we have a subsidy for a steep slope, but it doesn't mean necessarily that it is the same subsidy that will be applicable to service the disability. Disability one will be additional to that. So all the other, so as we approve the plan, we approve a holistic plan which is very, very specific in what is being financed and what is being considered. If there are any variations or to augment any financial implications, then that is having the planning phase. So that now, when we are using community approach, we have a personal attention given to all the beneficiaries. And then there are there is a basket of options that are there, and we usually say no one size fits all. So that now the MEC, the member of the Executive Council of the province, has got a discretion to authorize any variation or any additional funds or any other service that is required over and above what is given as a subsidy to a South African beneficiary. So he may consider that in this case, while well advised, we have to do this for the individual beneficiary. And then, of course, we have people with various needs, and those will be taken into consideration up front before the third bridge put on the foundation. All these calculations are done and abandoned up front, such that when the title deed is already targeted at the individual or the individual beneficiary. So are the general, that is the general approach to all our programs. And we have just an example of setting of what can be additional. We have access paving and ramps. We can have hand and grab rails. We have increased bathroom. We may have any other as advised and prescribed by the authorities on the ground. And the MEC should be able to authorize that. And the policy itself, I want to slide with you. The policy itself was put together in the year 2009. If I'm not mistaken, the new policy was put in 2009 in order to enhance. We have after we have learned from the previous or the old RDP houses, which we are no more building at the moment. We are now building different houses, but we have learned from the mistakes of the past.
where we shoddy houses built for almost everyone, and it became worse with the people with special needs and all that. And it is now history in our department. We endeavor to work better. We do not include in the slides. We have an NHBRC, National Home Builders Registration Council, that is responsible for quality assurance of all our buildings. The NHBRC Act is the one that is empowering that entity of ours to conduct the quality assurance. This is what is the inspectorate of the department, and they also offer engineering services. Now, a beneficiary may be disadvantaged after he has moved in the building. Maybe something can happen, but when we were first offered the house, there was no problem. And then the person then is affected possibly by some factors, and then maybe he loses sight or something happens. In that case, then there is room for the individual to apply to the office of the MEC. We always say the MEC because not all municipalities are accredited with the provision of houses. Not all municipalities have got the capacity to build houses. So most of our houses are still built and constructed by the MECs. In instances where, like in the city of Johannesburg and the seven metros in the country, the municipality is able to intervene and applications are able to be sent through to the MMC. Now there is a cap at the moment, a cap in terms of funding, how much is made available. We have $12,073. It's an additional for a wheelchair dependency, and $4,000 for the other disability. But this is the old cap, which has not taken account the inflation rate, since 2009, and in some instances it may not be adequate. But the MEC has got that overriding mandate to be able to authorize on individual basis whenever there's a need. We are aware through the presidential hotline and other departmental communications, and also through the oversight visits, we are aware of some of the complaints that we get from the committee regarding the size of our houses. And at the moment, we have appointed a consortium of firms, construction firms that are going to help us with a costing of a new product, not only the disabled, but all various products of our department. A normal house, we're going to record it. Houses for all various needs are going to be recorded, including the rental units and so on. So we are going to come with a new set of costing, which at the moment is being worked upon. The example is that in certain areas, the cost of building the same house is higher than in certain other places. In Northern Cape in particular, people pay for transport. So the transport might take 30% of the value of the subsidy because the materials are very far apart. But they have to be drawn from very far industries. And in places like Gauteng, where you have a 100 kilometer radius to access any firm, you find that transport material for transport is relatively low, and that impacts on the construction of houses. But the land might be more expensive and be cheaper that side, so there's those combinations. But at the end of the day, we have no one cost that fits all the products. A product of a certain quality might be more cheaper in certain areas than in other areas. So hence the study that is now it's a nationwide study. The results of this, we're expecting the results towards the end of next month, so that that will guide and inform our budgeting process in the next financial year. Yes, as I have said, the final result of the court thing will be at the end of October. Here in this slide, we endeavor just to explain the process on how we go about, you know, performing our duties. The Human Settlement Development Grant, it is the grant to build a house, which is our main capital fund, and that is at national level, our budget vote. And then we allocate it to provinces according to an agreed formula, which is determined by the treasurer according to that formula. Gauteng will get so much, it depends on other provinces so much. That is not determined by us, but that's what we do. And then the budget is then sent to the provinces. The provinces will then determine what it is that they will do within their own area. If there are certain needs in certain town, in certain area, more money will go to that area according to their needs. But we as national will have allocated money as predetermined. And the same procedure will be cascaded towards metros and municipalities with the housing capacity. They will be taking over those responsibility of distributing and allocating the funds as is necessary. And within that process, within the planning process, it is allowed to have a certain amount reserved, and the MEC has been given the last responsibility to be able to say, this amount we have for our needs. We have not had an instance where the National Department was approached to say we do not have enough instance. I'm not saying we are efficient, but at least in terms of the system, in terms of the requirements, this is where we are going. And as far as possible, we predetermine the needs up front, up to the title deed, before even we start building. This is where this is. Now, it is implies we might not have used a good English. We'll apologize for that. But we are trying to say there is no quota. We are trying to say there is no quota for the disability. Everything will be determined by the need. That means if there is a need of so much, we will reserve so much. We will not say only 10% will be reserved for it there. And then, of course, there is a general survey that we conduct on from time to time, because people move in the process, and there's a lot of movement from one city to the other, from one province and so forth. And we also endeavor just to reflect on the statistics or what have we done and how much did it cost the department as of now. We drew our report from 31 July. We have a system called HSS, Housing Subsidy System, which registers the beneficiaries and the allocations, and it's also talking to the payment system, the VAS, and of all that, we came with this slide. We spent some time on this one to show what we have already delivered. The numbers reflect what is on our system. It may not be the reality on the ground in terms of the need. Some people may have fallen through the cracks because of movement, moving from one area to the other. But in the records of the department, this is what we are having, which hopefully is very verifiable. We can go to these areas and overload the ID numbers and follow the beneficiaries in those provinces. Unfortunately, not broken down by town here, but we took a general picture according to provinces. So, according to our system, we have picked up that Mpumalanga seems to be having, Mpumalanga and Western Cape seems to be having more on their system. We don't know the reasons, but this is what we have, this is what is the actual on the ground. And we only have 20 for Limpopo and 8 for Northwest on our system. And this is what we have, as a department. This is what we have delivered. And more information can be provided if necessary. We are in the process of trying to enhance the participation of beneficiaries into the system. In the past, we have to confess that the participation was not at the level that is required, not only for the people with disability, but the participation of beneficiaries in general in the department. We have the systems in place, but we don't have the necessary forums that are adequate for all the beneficiaries to be able to express themselves. We are in a process now on a turnaround strategy in the department where we'll be able to reach out to our beneficiaries and their representatives and to be able to have more participation instead of doing things for people. They should be part of the learning and be part of what the future is there for them. So we are in a process of setting up those forums. And in our strategic plans, we'll be reaching out to all our beneficiaries, including people with disability. Of course, one of the reasons why Mr. Tajolobe is here, it is because it is his section that has got the responsibility of doing social facilitation. And this is a newly created structure in our department to be able to run with this process of consultation. And it is already formalized. It is approved by the public service. So we now have the structure that should be able to assist with the social facilitation to interact. So that we are able to interact with our beneficiaries. That is to promotion of awareness. Of course, we are part of the IGR, intergovernmental committees, and we are represented amongst other people. I want to acknowledge Mrs. Isho is here, so we are in full force. She is representing us in certain forums. And we collaborate with all the levels of government, from municipalities and the provinces. And in conclusion, we are saying, depending on the current, on the findings we make, we will come with a new design and the costing of various typology of houses. There is quite a monotony in the way we've been delivering our houses. But with the consultation process that the consortium is involved in now, we'll be able to come with data typologies of houses, we'll be able to come with better products, we'll be able to satisfy people to a greater extent. And maybe I should pause there for now. This is the presentation as we have presented, and thank you.
Thank you very much, welcome, and we really sympathize with you, because I think you are a waste in the wilderness. We hope that the next time we meet with yourselves, we will have more, women. In your leadership, because you seem to be telling us that women are not capable, to lead. Thank you very much for your presentation. As I was listening, I saw, for instance, one of them is the strength that we are in the process. As I indicated when we started, that this target group is the mostly neglected, a target. And in the 18 years, in government, and whilst this convention was brought into force in 2007, and as we know that South Africa is a signatory
and also ratified this convention. We are really not happy the way, you know, the process is unfolding. Like to say that, you know, it seems like persons with disability are not taken as, are not regarded as full human beings. Hence, everything is in the process of, you know, being put into, you know, or implemented. But let me allow the honorable members to come in. Honorable Ngumalo, Honorable Lamul, Honorable Dichitelo, Honorable Polve, and Honorable DM, Honorable Connie. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to say congratulations to the Department of Human Settlements. They are building beautiful houses, really beautiful. You know, people who benefited before this RDP, they are starting to be, I can't say they are jealous, but really, they are feeling very bad because those houses were built before, they are very bad. But now, people who benefited now, they are really happy. I just want to say congratulations. Pick up, guys, they are doing a good job. But I'm not happy at all with thousands of people with disability, because the number of 1,430, the whole country, 9 provinces, I don't think it's really, they are not, those people, they are not benefiting. Maybe you can come up with a roadshow, with turnaround strategy. Come up with a roadshow. There are days when maybe they say it's a disability or disabled month or what, maybe, and take that opportunity to go and address those people with disability, because they don't know, they know they are not benefiting from this government. They don't get houses like other people. If you can check this number, you can see that really they are not benefiting. I can say maybe just come up with roadshows, go and address those people in their shelters, their shelters in all over the country, that you can go and tell them about the that they can benefit, they can get some houses, because really, they are really suffering. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I also feel the very same, that 18 years into democracy, and we're only on 1,400 special needs houses. It is simply unacceptable. And it is really unacceptable if you look at one as other figures that you have presented the committee, with only 8 in a province of Northwest, and geographically these people are far apart. And I can't believe that 20 in Limpopo, because of social development I've seen what was needed there, and that was about 4 or 5 years ago. So it is unacceptable, really. It is really unacceptable. And I think the gentleman spoke on providing more info on this matter. I think you need to provide us more info. Then my next question is, thank you for the presentation, but to me too, I was really expecting much, much more. You have summarized persons with walking aids, with usage of wheelchairs that are partially profound. Can you give us a breakdown of province too, so that we can know what the situation and the needs are? And then you said it is on page 2, increase of bathroom size at the expense of other rooms. That will definitely not help these people. Because the minute you cut on space for this able person, you cut on the manner in which they can proceed living. So you can't cut on space. You need to rather add to the space. And I wrote here why, and the effect on other rooms, why can this not be done for this item? Why not be done by adding to the allocation? And then on page 3, the old RDP houses. and I've been in some in the Ashton area. Believe me, they are bathroom size. That's the complete house, big bathroom size. Very, very, very poor construction. And we do have disabled persons there. Their lives are sitting in a wheelchair, battling to get out by the door, or otherwise they need to be inside all day. What will be done to these houses, and many of them are in the rural areas, because when they start the building houses, they start in the rural areas. How and what strategy is in place to at least add to the comfort of those people that's in the rural areas? And then you said you have a policy on the enhancement to the dwelling applies to new plan dwellings as well as existing. I said, how many existing dwellings are part and parcel of your policy enhancements that you now are going to work on? Then on page 4, you've got the figures for 4,091 for visible doorbell indicators. Now, I really want to know if that is so expensive, a visible door indicator. Is it so expensive? And if you intend accommodating the disabled persons, then you need to buy in bulk. Why not negotiate to get a better price on this item? And then on the next slide, houses for disabled persons, you say the department is aware of complaints regarding the size of the dwelling and especially the bathroom, and we all are aware of it, but very little is really being done. I would like to know, do you do oversight? Do you do monitoring on what needs to be implemented, especially on construction of these houses? And as I said, as Chair also said, why only now? Why are you only starting to at least better the conditions of disabled persons living in these houses? Why only now? Surely if you work hand in hand, as you claim to do with provincial governments and local governments, they do have data or data, whatever you call it, in place that you could have worked on if we are serious about bettering the conditions for these people. Then special sanitation needs remain a challenge, you know. Even for those disabled persons, I know of a lady that came to me, she said, please can you just help me to get my so-called toilet in order so that I can also have a dignified life and a dignified manner of using it. And we are doing something about it now. What percentage of disabled persons are in your department and also in senior positions? We won't speak of women. I sincerely hope that they are also there. Because recently I have so many complaints of people saying, we can do the work, but when people look at us and we being disabled, they immediately turn us down. So what percentage do you have? And then my last question, there was another breakdown in province. Oh yes, I spoke on the more info that you can give us. Is there any strategy in place in the department as to run with your so-called line departments, and it's human settlements, local government, public works, to at least get to your time frame set faster? Or ease or more, are going to speed up the process to get to that. I think I've stopped there for a while. Chair.
Thank you, Chair President. Let me just thank the presenter for what he has just presented to us. But most of the questions are, I think, have been covered, Chair, but I have to come back to the 1,413, I also have to say it's a very, very low number, and maybe we are complaining. If only we can hear what criteria are you using, maybe we will agree to the number of houses built for disabled. And I'm from the Northwest Province, and in the area, just the town where I am, there are well over, you know, the
the disabled people who need some housing. I think they are even more than what you have for the whole province. So if we can just have the criteria that you are using for the provinces, maybe you have a specialized way of doing things and of building, if you can explain that to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The speaker highlighted that there were complaints which they were trying to address and so on. My question is, from those, and more especially the complaints in terms of the houses which have been built and so on, my question is there any record for the complaints which you had to identify the complaints from disabled people, one? Secondly, have they been complaining about the size of the houses? My intake is there is what you call inspectors when their houses are built. That now it shows here, once somebody complaining about the size of the houses, somehow the inspectors are not doing the job. I want to find out that is there any monitoring system in place or any monitoring to find out the inspectors before the houses can be built up. They inspect the houses so that they can be able to discuss with the contract involved and then report to get to the department. Thank you.
Chairperson, on page 6, I just want to hear from the department what measures are in place to ensure that persons with visual impairments and blind persons are able to access information from the department, and how does the department ensure that the information it develops is produced in a manner that persons with disabilities can easily access via internet, promotional pamphlets, etc. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me also take the opportunity to thank the department for their presentation and also say I'm partly covered by my colleagues, but Chairperson, you know, I was one of the councillors in this area of the Western Cape. And in that area, in Kaifontein, we built 10,000 units in 10 phases, but not a single one of those houses are conducive for people with disabilities. You know, it takes it back to the houses that was built in Delft. It's also in the Western Cape. We call them asbestos houses. And you know, the asbestos itself, it's something else. It's not brick. Now how much more for a person with disability to stay in that house? My question around that issue, is the department doing something around it asbestos house? Are you still building it or not? And or each department will maybe take its disability to another area that is not asbestos or what. But that is my question around the issue of it Delft, because I'm very worried about it asbestos and Delft. And come back to the I'm also still in the Western Cape too. What is this area called? The India area. In Langa. You know that area also, I don't think it's conducive for people with disability. Because there are stairs, there are, you know. What is the area? Not N2K2, thank you. N2K2. Honorable Noma India. Deputy Speaker. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Zweke. Chairperson, my question also to the department. I want to check the department that how many houses have been allocated to persons with disabilities in the past financial year? What is the current backlog? And another one, and I think it will be the last one, what measures are in place to ensure that houses that are built are accessible to persons with disabilities? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me just apologize for arriving late. Chairperson, I just wanted to maybe add to some of the questions that have been asked before. I want to know whether the department has actually got fully updated database on the number of people with disabilities who require housing, because I believe that when a person applies for RDP house, there's actually no indication or no section on an application form where a person is able to indicate that they've actually got some sort of disability. And I wanted to just get some clarity with that regard, because I think once we look at that 1,413, it's very difficult to judge whether there's actually been, you know, whether that's actually a success story or not, because unless we have the amount of people who are waiting for houses, and we juxtapose that with the amount of people who are now in houses, we will not be able to judge whether there's actually been any success. And I would therefore like to ask whether there's a fully updated database that tells us the full picture of how many people are waiting for houses. Because recently I watched a documentary on SABC, and unfortunately the story that was told is that, you know, some people with disabilities wait up to 4 years or more to access housing, and once access to housing is not accessible for them or does not speak to the needs they've got. And I just wanted to know whether we've got any figures on how many people are waiting. Thank you.
I will share the responsibility of response to the questions. For now, I'll give Chief Director, Mr. John Lobe, to respond to them, and then immediately thereafter, we'll endeavor to answer all the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. First, I must say that this is actually not representative of the department and how it looks in terms of gender balance. We endeavor to meet the targets set by government in terms of representativity just within the department. And I must say that we have, by and large, moved in terms of making sure that there is balance in terms of people with disabilities, in terms of women, not only in the department, but in leadership positions. I must say that the last employment equity report, we can make it available to members. I don't want to sing our praises before we do that. We will make it available to members. It's easily available. We'll just send it so that you can judge us on the basis of that. I was in my previous responsibilities responsible for the employment equity and the transformation. I must say that this is actually not representative of the Chair. There's a question which you correctly asked, why is it that we are saying we're in the process after 18 years? Chair, we might not have told the whole story in terms of the strike that we made within the department. We, as the national department, are custodians of the housing policy, as we are mandated by the Housing Act and all other legislative bases. We are responsible for the national policy. Then the provinces will be responsible for implementing the policy. Then we will also be responsible for monitoring whether that policy is being followed. That's one of our responsibilities. The DDG alluded to the fact that we have
delegate certain responsibilities to MECs because they are nearer the ground than we are at national level. We have had a number of policy reviews over a number of years. If you remember, we started at in Buchabelo, where we came up with a white paper on housing, and the results of that were mushrooming of RDPs, which some refer to as both as Inyao. Some of those housings were, you know, 18 square meters. Some of them were, which are not even more than a bathroom. Some of them, we are quite honest about it, were not fit for human occupation, given the short work that was. I must say upfront that we have a policy called rectification to try and address exactly that problem. It is a costly exercise because it means that money was wasted. But we are saying that because we have to restore the dignity and security of our people, we have to go through that painful as it is. Some of those houses are at the moment being demolished and rebuilt to the present specifications. Some of them are being rectified if they have a certain problem, but they don't need to be demolished. In the past, you find that some of our application forms never had a clause that would actually say that you must declare your disability. But now, the present forms that we have, in terms of application forms for disability, they do have that. And it is up to provinces then to make sure that the person's disability is taken care of when they capture him or her in the system. The system is good, it's only good as long as people feed it. We are custodians of what we call the housing subsidy system, it's called HSS, where everything is loaded. Information of potential beneficiaries, approved beneficiaries, projects that are on the ground, which stage are they in all over the country. It's called HSS. Now the provinces feed that into the system. So we will only depend on what the provinces put into the system. It might be that some of the figures that we have, this is what appears at the moment on the HSS. The situation on the ground, as the DDG said, might be different in terms of the number. We will then provide you with the correct numbers. We send out a message to provinces to please update us. But it takes some time to get provinces to upload some of the information. But we definitely provide the committee with updated information in terms of the whole card. But at the moment, what appears in our HSS is the figures that we have provided. Yes, it is not a good picture, but that's what we have at the moment. Thank you. I think the other colleagues will be looking at the other questions which I might not have touched. But the most important one would be, just to finish up, the type of dwelling that a person with disability has. It depends on the type of disability the person has. And the province then would make the necessary top-up. The policy says that they need to make a top-up from their own funds. So the kind of house that a person who needs a wheelchair would get would be the type of house which has a ramp and the bathroom that has certain fittings that would be there for a normal person. But it depends on the type of disability. If you are blind, you will have a certain house that will actually assist you in navigating your way through the house. Lastly, the convention, which was part of the UN Convention on Persons with Disabilities, we have guided us together with the Housing Act in terms of e-policy enhancement around persons with disabilities. We are in the process of reviewing our own policy because we now have a new mandate called human settlements. We are no longer going to be providing that top structure. Now we have to provide a whole new basket of products. We must make sure that the houses that we build are having within a reasonable distance and other amenities like your recreational facilities, like you don't have to spend much money in terms of transport, which is what our people are suffering from. So we are now looking at not only the provision of the top structure, but provision of settlements. Now this we are doing in conjunction with other departments, like your COCTA, like your Department of Education, because we need now to streamline budgets so that when we plan a project as housing or human settlements, the other departments must also align their budgets so that if they have a settlement, a school would be provided. Because in the past, the two were not talking to each other. We will have a settlement somewhere, a school somewhere, because it's in the Department of Education's plan. It's not in our plan. So what we're trying to do now is that housing must be a catalyst to a number of socio-economic developments. We as housing must initiate the planning so that other departments must come and fit in. So we also have relations with the department, the new Department of People with Disabilities, so that they also can be part of the enhancement of the policy, the new policy. As DBG said, we are trying to look at costing of house for various disabilities to see how much is it that we will, in the next financial year, put in so that we have a much more better product. The old houses where your people with disabilities are still staying, they can apply for rectification so that we can quickly rectify so that the person will live in dignity. Thank you.
Mr. Lambert and a colleague, if you can also try to wrap up. What process will put the time frame? Yeah, it will help our delegation. And if it is showing you for nothing.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a couple of issues that I want to highlight. First thing, the fact that, I mean, we take the proposal for a need for also in a general strategy with respect to our delivery mechanisms. That will further that in terms of our planning and our progress. The second question I think that was asked was related to oversight and monitoring. And indeed the department has a monitoring and evaluation unit, which is part of our PMU, in terms of the new structure, and monitoring does take place in terms of the projects that are being delivered at provinces and municipalities. Perhaps what we may take back to the department is the necessity to zoom in on those projects in terms of the extent to which they talk to people with disabilities, and therefore what kinds of progress that we need to embark on to ensure that those projects actually talk to those needs. It may be that we may want to revisit in our research, our monitoring techniques
to include, to target rather, people living with disabilities. The second question from the other question, which I think was important to DG, was the whole issue around asbestos housing. Now, there is recorded evidence of a link between asbestos as a product in terms of mining and lung cancer. And in terms of the ministerial norms and standards, asbestos is not being used as a product to provide housing, and therefore, no, we are not providing asbestos housing. Record, the other important question that was raised related to access of information by people with vision impairment. We'd like to clear this question because I think that we need a comprehensive response. To go back to the department, get the necessary systems, take a report on the necessary systems that have been put in place and where they are there, so that we then give the members comprehensive information. So we take back and we communicate responses to the project secretary to ensure that, I mean, you have the comprehensive information. That's about it. Thanks.
You are recognized.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My apology for arriving late. I had an emergency with my luggage at the airport. Yes. As I was saying, Women Economic Empowerment Breakfast. Yeah, no, I got dinner which we had on the 20th of August in Cape Town. Honorable Minister Lulu Dingwana, Minister for Department of Women, Children and People with Disability, recognized the work of the department in relation to the Women's Bill as well as the Youth Bill. And she also said that she's hoping for a disability bill. So that we registered as action item for March to do a disability bill or for a belt for people with disabilities, just to be sensitive in terms of the language. The issue around roadshows is also registered as an action item. We usually do awareness campaigns when we do the 16 days of activism, and also when we go to provinces through social facilitation and consumer education programs before awarding houses to beneficiaries. However, with a more intensive focus in terms of doing roadshows that particularly focus on persons of disability, that we register as a specific program for the department going forward. And we are hoping that we launched it, and hoping we will launch that on the second day of activism, also the third day of December, which is the International Day of People with Disability. That will do, Chairperson. We also work with the Department of Social Development in provinces and Department of Land and Rural Development, especially the one poverty program, recognizing the needs of people with disability, particularly rural areas who are also poverty stricken, so they get trouble, if not many times challenges in terms of poverty, unemployment, inequalities, plus disability. So we work with the Department of Health as well. They've sponsored a number of wheelchairs to our department, which Minister Lulu Dingwa and herself and our minister and the documents I have handed over. Chair, the issue of the National Integrated Disability Forum or Persons with Disability Forum is what we hope to kickstart as soon as possible, especially with our launch in December, where we have representatives from provinces and also from national and key departments that I've alluded to and more that we will add. We also do training of persons with disability because we have to look at them holistically, as members have noted, not only as beneficiaries but as participants. We have training in housing for persons with disability driven by our own NHBRC institution. So we also felt that it is really important to have a structured strategy or framework that promotes the empowerment and participation of people with disability. And that strategy will be similar to the women strategy that we have in the department and the youth strategy already that exists in the department, so that we don't only look at people with disability as beneficiaries, but also empowerment. Our philosophy being to empower and to also facilitate participation. As the GBSA philosophy, nothing without us, nothing about us without us. So we hope to follow in the same line, Chairperson. I think I've covered some of the questions, but I think when we do our road shows, we link that to
the current consultation processes that are happening around the housing, the house typology design, so that we get input from the people with disability in terms of what they need comprehensively for the typology that you are planning to do, Chair. Thanks.
I'll quickly just summarize the outstanding questions. Yes. One question is about special sanitation needs. The Department of Water Affairs used to be responsible for this service, sanitation. Since the beginning of last year, that function has been transferred to the Department of Human Settlements. We are now responsible for sanitation in South Africa, and it is now going to be even one of our prime, it's going to be the department called part of the SIP, yeah, a special infrastructure program. So we are having this program that is going to be announced very soon, which is going to it has been announced recently, but the details are going to be announced very soon in terms of interventions in rural areas, in terms of sanitation, and we will then make sure that within that program, the people with the disability will also benefit. There was no special emphasis until we came to this meeting today, but we have this responsibility at the Department of Human Settlements. We'll therefore, from this meeting, make sure that the needs of the people with disabilities are also catered in this department, in this sanitation program of ours. And then the other one that was outstanding, I just noted them briefly, it's about how do we interact with other departments to ensure the speedy process, speedy turnaround time. We have a land release program with the Department of Public Works and Land Affairs. It is coordinated by the Housing Development Agency of the Department of Human Settlement. This is a new arrangement. The HDA itself is a new structure that was founded last year, but we have a working relation, and we should see the fruits of this turnaround strategy. We are talking with the Department of Environmental Affairs with regard to the impact assessment, EIAs, you know, environmental impact assessment, so that we get a quick turnaround time. And with the with COPTA, we have a joint meeting. The MECs and their minister, and our MECs and our minister, we have a joint meeting where we plan together, we work together in terms of provision of houses and services, and synchronizing and aligning our plans. So there is a lot of work already that has been done with regard to putting effort to aligning our activity. This is already in process. The other one, that question that we think maybe we didn't respond adequately, is about the inspectorate report. How is it that we have a team of inspectors, but they cannot pick up the defects or the omissions? And we are going to look into this matter. We'll see if we cannot have a template that is included in the inspector's report so that we're able to draw the information on the inspections with regard to women with disabilities. We will consult accordingly so that that report is able to certify all the structures of the government. And I think the last one was about the database and the backlog. What about the database? How many, what, and so on. We will go out of our way to make sure that we generate through the provinces, they have to generate a separate, that means draw from their, generate a separate database, and which will make it available. It will be a working document. It will be a baseline information. As we have progress, we say we're here, how are we going. We have not generated a database. What we have presented here was just the first attempt, but we now have it as a formal request that we have to draw it down per province as is requested. We have to draw it down per province, per town, per municipality. The records are there. It is up to us to get them out of the system and be able to articulate them and present them to them as our baseline information. We promise to do that within the next year. Whatever we have been now, we will, because we are working with provinces, sometimes we are delayed. So if possible, we can allow that in our next meeting, when we next present to the committee, to the committee, we can then make that information available. But in terms of advanced
paperwork or correspondence, we can come back to you, but we can then present it live later on. The documents can be made available. And in terms of monitoring evaluation, my colleagues have indicated that we have elevated monitoring evaluation. And for the first time, we have a Ministry of Monitoring and Evaluation. And we have aligned our systems to the presidency, the Ministry of Monitoring and Evaluation. So it is now a new structure that is functional. And it is also available. The monitoring reports are available to the committee as and when required. Thank you.
Sorry, there was another question on how many houses have been allocated to persons with disabilities within this financial year. We will come back to you because we don't have the actual data, as we said, so that we can actually say that within this financial year, from all the provinces, this is the breakdown, and including the actual locations, the municipalities, where these have been provided for. I think that's the breakdown we're going to do, so that we don't just give a lump sum in terms of your province. It will also assist you in your oversight to actually zoom on those areas. There's also the question on the N2 walkout, not be conducive to people with disabilities. This we actually noted. And there are efforts to get that rectified. Of course, we'll put up front there are a number of other problems in that project. Not only you walk out, but certain structural defects that we need to actually rectify, but not hiding any info around there. So that part of the rectification will include the actual ramps in terms of you walk out. I think that project also is part of the rectification exercise that we have. The rectification exercise doesn't mean that we also, as part of that, have engaged the services of the SIU, Special Investigation Unit, so that some of the culprits who actually provided the public with short work are brought to book. I think I should bring that to because as we should be spending on new projects, not on what somebody referred to as new old projects, because we're going backwards. But in order to rectify that, we're also engaging SIU, the number of companies that either have been blacklisted or people have been arrested and are in a process of court processes. Because it's actually a shame that we have so many houses that we need to rebuild. I think there was also, we answered that one. On the criteria that we use to identify various people with disabilities, I think it was asked the question at that time. We actually leave it to provinces, because they are implementing the project, to be able to identify people with, when they apply, they would state that, I mean, the type of disability the person has. But we need to go and also verify the series of issues, medical certificate that needs to be brought. So there's a certain criteria that we look at. We then, after everything, the application has been processed, then we have all the data in terms of the type of disability the person has. Then when we, if subsidy is approved, it's approved with that in mind, so that if there's a top-up, it should be put up front. I think that was the question which was asked. I think I've tried to answer basically some of them that was there. Answer.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for responding to the questions raised, but I didn't hear a response to a question that was asked in terms of positions held by persons with disabilities in senior levels in the year. And also, give us an indication as to the 2% target employment in terms of persons with disabilities. Let me just take the last round of questions and then, yeah. Honorable Lena.
On I heard for the official answer on asbestos housing. You know what it is? It is, and I've seen it recently in the Eastern Cape, it is slabs that they use. And inside the slab they put polystyrene. Is that still on? And it's a couple of months ago that I saw this being built in a town of Humansdorp in the Eastern Cape. I cannot believe that our department is still doing harms like that. Because it's unacceptable, you know. One should take in consideration our climate change too. And I would like to know if this department ever heard of climate change that we're now experiencing in doing construction. So I saw that personally, and I was shocked to see that polystyrene is put in between two cement slabs for walls. I saw it with my own eyes, and if you go there and check. Because, you know, I feel it's the way of contractors cutting on costs, pocketing more profit, and giving us less value for our money. So it's unacceptable, and it should really be investigated and ended. And if it is, if you find that to be done to all the, to the block of housing that they did, they should definitely be kept liable for the failures of that project. And I want to refer again to the Ashton area. I don't know what the department is going to do. And I know that money, if funding comes from national, it needs to go to the provinces. Those houses are a couple of years old already in the Ashton area, not even having a bathroom door. And it is not your liability to see to it, but if the department monitors from the national side, you will find these shortfalls, because this comes from municipalities. And it's just our pills, and our people are suffering. Disabled persons are suffering. I would like to know what you are going to do about all those houses that do not even have a bathroom door. And then my last question, Chair, is on a complaint mechanism. Are there any complaint mechanisms, I wrote here, in place in the event that a person with disability is discriminated against to seek recourse? What do you do? Does that ever happen? Does it ever come to your department? Are you aware of it? Because, you know, being disabled gives you a backlog immediately. You cannot do things the way a disabled body person can do it. And many of these disabled persons are not even aware of what their rights are. So is there any mechanism in place in your department to see to this issue? And as the lady said, I was also going to ask this question, but I think she's partly answered it. In the disabled people, when they come here, or persons, they always say, nothing for us without us. They do say that. That's the slogan. And my question was, on are disabled persons that are needs included in your integrated plans, integrated and strategic plan of your department? Because I always feel that if you include them, speak to them, workshop the issues that you are battling with, they will come up with concrete solutions, because they are experiencing it, not us. And it can be of great help to the department. Thank you.
Thank you.
I recognize three more hands, Member Sake, Member Polso, and Member Dier.
Thank you very much, Chair. I guess not here today. Yeah. And thank you very much, Department, for your presentation. I heard you talking about this grant, Human Settlement Development Grant, and I'm now thinking of this MIT, the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, which I think is also be monitored by your department. I just want to get clarity on the matter, because I'm also serving on sports and recreation, and we are fighting with Human Settlement that you are utilizing the whole grant, to build houses and sanitation and whatever and whatever. We want our 50% of recreational facility, of sports facility. So today, because you're here, I'll take an advantage that you clarify me on the two grants that you are monitoring. And secondly, Chair, the issue of monitoring, you know, I want to stress that you also extend your monitoring in the regional or whatever, in your offices in the regions. Because you find that there's a project in my ward, in Dr. Jeff Moroka Ward 24, there's a project of housing. Then you fill up forms, you identify beneficiaries and submit them to the department. But most of the information is going to be misplaced in your department. You'll find that you want the information of certain person, then that information is nowhere to be found in that department. So I think there's a need for you to go and monitor the information and whatever in your regional office, because most of the information is not recorded, it's just misplaced. The other issue, I think I've got a case whereby a person around 2000, that person was approved. She was supposed to be allocated the house. The name was approved in the list. It was appeared on the list of the beneficiaries. But that house was not built. Even today, that house is not built. And we have been fighting with the department that we have to for the houses in the very same constituency. And when we check the system of the department, says that house for that person, it has been approved, and it has been built in that year. But when we check the person, there's no house in that.
With the cell phone here, please, can you move your cell phone away from the system?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's not mine, unfortunately. Yeah, so I don't know how to deal with the cases like that one. There's no house. Even if you can go there today, there's no house, but the system in your department said that house was approved. I think that's the case. And the last one, I think I will do it for this meeting, because it's a hell of a problem with regard to the project of the housing in Northwest. Thank you very much.
I just want to know, how does the department ensure that information it develops is produced and in a manner that persons with disabilities can easily access?
Thank you for the Chairperson, thank you very much. I think all Grace touch on the issue of monitoring. I think we must stress the issue of monitoring. You know, I've got a serious problem with the department wasting a lot of money like this to rebuild houses that are built already. You know, I want to check with the department this issue of PHP. Yeah. Now, if PHP was used mostly here in the Western Cape, and you know, this PHP as a group or what, companies or what? Yeah, whatever. They are not same. I don't think they. Okay. The Chairperson, I don't think they are experienced. Most of them. You know, I think I was still about Wellington, because it's where I'm aware of the work that I've done today. You know, in Wellington, there's a phase that is phase one. In fact, I don't know, one of the officials mentioned of all the departments will come together. The first problem of the infrastructure itself. You know, the area itself, it's leaking water from I don't know where to where. It's like a waterfront, you know. Now, if the HP will build on top, I think even the people that was doing infrastructure were not doing the infrastructure right in that specific area. Now, they will build the houses, these RDP houses, on this, I don't know, necessary infrastructure, houses will
fall apart. And a lot of houses that fall apart, it's not rebuilt. It was 2000, it's now 2012. It's not rebuilt. And you know, there's two persons I know that it is a disability. And one of them I took out of one house and I relocated in another house. But in that house I relocated there too. It's not the right house, it's not a conducive house for disability. But my question, what is the department doing with these BHP groups? Because really, they are messing somewhere, somehow. They are messing big time, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman. That's a proposal. For what Ms. Dimu had indicated, my proposal to National is, after the investigation of those who have made a mess, please can you make sure that even the BRHC is dealt with? I'm saying this because contractors are very bad. They will make a mess in this province, and then if they are not dealt with, they move to another province and make a mess also. That's only my proposal. Thank you.
Chair, who Mr. Nombatana will respond on PHP, who Mr. Sedition will respond on strategy. I will just take the one on the human stock the issue, ma'am. We'll investigate, but the department definitely. We have norms and standards which are set out in what we call our housing code. It's there, it's available in the website, housing code. Housing code. We have recently reviewed it. It's there, it's updated. There are certain norms and standards, including the issue on people with disabilities. They are included in terms of what needs to be done. So each and every province and the municipality that is a developer has the housing code, the norms and standards that have been agreed upon by the built environment, which is what the NHBRC is supposed to monitor, that they adhere to the norms and standards. So we will definitely investigate the human stock issue. We'll ask the province to provide us with the necessary information. If you could tell us the exact location where the project is. I still recall that because I do a lot of oversight, not monitoring, oversight, with the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. We've just completed Eastern Cape, we completed the Northwest. We do acknowledge the problems in the Northwest. In fact, we will even share with you the report on Northwest so that you then can see the picture. In terms of climate change, yes, in fact, the department, we have a research unit. We also have established what we call an innovation hub, which then looks into new typologies and the effect of the climate to, for instance, can we use the same brick, just like in the rural areas where we need to now advance our communities, that perhaps the mud house is no longer, but especially where areas like in the Eastern Cape, which are prone to tornadoes, and some areas of KZN, what this making, we're advising people on new ways of, because the old rendezvous is no longer conducive to climate change. So we have what we call an innovation hub, which looks at various scientific methods to enhance the built environment. We will certainly investigate the Ashton area, ma'am. We will, after this, I will just need some details so that we can be able to zoom to the province and say, can you provide us with what is happening on the ground? We have the complaint mechanism. We have a 24-hour hotline where all complaints are registered. And we monitor that they are responded to. They have a turnaround time, I'm not sure, whether 7 days, I think 7 days, so that people can at least get an acknowledgement that the problem is being dealt with by so-and-so. So you need to get in touch with that. We do have a complaint mechanism, and it's available to anybody. Yeah. Regarding MIG, what is called the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, its relationship to the Housing Development Grant, the grant that we give to provinces. MIG is administered by COPTA. Human Settlements administers the Human Settlements Grant. Yes, we have had serious problems where you find that there will be houses that are built without infrastructure in bulk, because these two are not in one pot. But since the advent of the human segments, we have, and the outcome-based program of the government, we have within our outcome aid, we have COPTA as part of that. Because we have seen that IMIG has been misused by certain municipalities. While it's supposed to go underground, it goes to pay salaries. And yet, it's a grant, and grants are conditional. You cannot spend it on anything else except what was intended. But unfortunately, it's out of our hands. Who treasure that monitor that. So we have a relationship, because we cannot build houses without the bank. So of necessity, these two departments are talking together. Yes. So that we remove this issue of having construct houses and then later have to put in the bank. It's very costly. You have to break walls, you have to do all sorts of things. So that's the relationship. Municipal infrastructure grant is administered by COPTA. We administer the human settlements grant. There are other grants, like the what you call urban settlements grants, which are part of the human settlements grant. My colleague will talk on PHP, and then Usedisha will talk on the strategy.
Okay.
Just before you go. You're saying that the department is it user friendly to people with disabilities? Yes, we are investigating. We initiated that when I was still at the transformation. That our material, which is a requirement also by government, is accessible to all. For instance, we were in the process of in developing the Braille for people to be able to access. We even experimented with business cards that have Braille, so that when you talk to a person who's blind, you can. Yes, we are trying to get it right. It's quite a involved process. Thank you.
Thanks, colleague. Thanks, Chairperson. Just to pick up further on the issue of MIG,
yeah,
and our relationship, I think it's important to emphasize here that we do have a very close working relationship with COPTA. What they do impacts on what we do as human settlements. And my colleague is also alluded to the USDG that you are managing. I think from a need point of view, perhaps it's important for us to raise the point that sometimes there is this challenge of having to have a common approach in respect, for example, to the naming of access to basic service. Let me explain this thing further, colleagues, right, among members. That the provision of electricity in settlement may mean something different for Gokta as is to human settlements. For human Gokta, it's about seeing that those communities are lighting, which they have electricity and therefore light, which then reduce levels of crime. But for human settlement, it's also about ensuring that electricity is accessed by households. So that in terms of the infrastructure design, those are some of the difficulties that we still have to resolve. We have USDGs, which we then give to municipalities, from treasury to us and straight to municipality. Yes, you remember this grant is meant at ensuring that all the necessary infrastructure requirements that meets housing development in essence and human settlement is funded for. Hence we have this USDG. But then the delivery mechanisms around this grant is municipality. I need to also highlight some of the constraints. It's a new grant, we are grappling with it at an implementation level, but also there are other issues related to the planning and financial cycles, which impedes on planning. So those are some of the things that we are dealing with COVID to resolve. On PHP, I think, honorable member, despite all these challenges, we must always not lose the overall strategic intent around these programs. These programs were designed to mobilize people to play an active role and as such be an agent in terms of improving the quality of life of our people. PHP, in a sense, became a housing provision mechanism that encapsulates those principles. However, there are challenges, as the member has already outlined. Part of the problem which we now, as government, have responded to is to provide trainings to those who are actually participating in this program. We are in touch and already here in the Western Cape, there's training provided by the Department of Labor so that the required skills are provided, whether it's mandatory, carpentry, and all the necessary skills, required for the built environment. But the other problem is, which we've discussed at the environmental meeting, but for quite some time, houses, PhD projects were not necessarily registered by NHBRC, which therefore has impact in terms of the quality. We now need to get a decision to say all projects, and more specifically PhD projects, must also be registered with NHBRC so as to ensure that the desired quality is realized. And in fact, the challenge of ratification right now is partly enhanced by this process, which we are beginning to tackle. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Your question around position filled by persons with disability, I think it's Mr. Nobatan has alluded earlier that we need to provide comprehensive information. We will do so. We do have persons employed in a department persons that are disabled in a department, so we'll provide comprehensive information. The other question about the number of persons included in the strategic plan, the answer is yes. I partly touched around the development of a strategy for the empowerment and participation of persons with disability in the department. We've completed phase one, which included the terms of reference. Phase two is the consultation, and that will link up with the suggestion that was put forward in terms of the roadshows and also the build to just create awareness. Thanks, Chair.
With your permission, may I just wrap up the outstanding questions quickly. The first one, maybe the difference between MIG and USDG. MIG is an old traditional municipality infrastructure grant, and it is still applicable to municipalities. Now there is a process of accreditation of cities, where the cities now are planning jointly with national to take over the responsibility of housing. Now, MIG in cities is called USDG, and it has been taken away from the province. It is going from national to the cities, directly to the measures, to the identified measures directly. It is not directly. So that is the difference. And for the first time, Department of Human Settlement has now a handle or control over USDG. When it was NEED, it was with COCTA. Now USDG is now with us. It means all accredited metros are dealing with us directly. COCTA comes in for support only. The provinces come for monitoring. That's the main difference. So when it comes to USDG, there is no excuse that houses can be built without infrastructure or any other, because this grant is coming from us as a human settlement. We still travel with MEEC, hence we have invited MIMEC with them, so that we work together to support those municipalities. Yes. And the other one was our queue jumping a missing house. This is a case of ICU. When we get such a hot when we get a special investigative unit, we have the in-house in the department. When we get such a query, we log it in with our investigations people. So this one, obviously, now from here, we have to zoom in and send it over. It's a case of a missing house. It's fraud. Yeah, missing house system says the house is there. Yeah, so this one is one of those that we have to zoom in immediately. And then about forms and applications, people being misplaced. It's a very great problem to us because initially municipalities had their own systems to capture applications. We have now introduced HSS, which is a national system. In the past, people could apply in different towns and get more than one house because each one had a local system. Now, HSS doesn't allow that anymore. So where there is HSS, it kicks you out if you've been allocated a house in another place, another town, or another province. So we now have this centralized system. However, some municipalities have not installed the HSS. And you find that the HSS applications are still to be captured by the province. And between the municipality and the province, things get lost. And those papers are actually households. People's future and so on. We are aware of that. We have the province is training most of the municipalities on the use of HSS. The system belongs to us, national. So we are actually funding the HSS and introduction of HSS in all municipalities. We should be through that problem very soon. Yeah. It helps us with double dipping, people getting access to it and so on. It works with the South African ID, and it's talking to all the governance systems, overhead, and so on. So we are tightening up and closing on that gap. Yes, I think with PHP we have answered, but we should also indicate that PHP should also be subjected to the EIAs, where they cannot build on top of places that are with empty places, So they are also subjected to the EIA process, environmental access and quality assurance. I think by now we have covered all the module.
Okay. This is just a really a question for clarity. If a family has started building their house or their home, and the breadwinner falls away, they started with their own funds, and the breadwinner passed on, can that family or can the woman that stays behind, does she have access to any grant or funding from the department? How does that work? Sometimes the house are halfway, they still need to put up the roof or whatever, but they start on their own by buying a piece of land, starting on their own. But when this happens, when the husband passes on, or the breadwinner passes on, there is no funding that allows them to complete their dwelling. Is there any way that they can access funding from the department to complete whatever they need to complete? Thank you.
Okay. We have the subsidy system, which is caters for certain categories, people who earn from 3,500 downward. And then we subsidize them in terms of their levels within that subsidy band. If there is somebody who within the family qualifies for that, they can apply for the subsidy. It's easier when they even have their own piece of land. Then that subsidy will be applied, will be given to the person. But if they don't fall within that, there are other subsidy mechanisms. For instance, we are introducing what we call, which is part of what we call the gap market. Those people who fall 3,501 who don't qualify, between 3,501 and with 15,000 now, they then qualify for a government assistance in terms of towards a bond. But it means that the person must go and apply for a bond. The government comes in the form of subsidy, which will be a deposit. It's what we call finance linked individual subsidy program. It's called FLIPS. Those people who, because the banks cannot give them, they are taken to be a risk. Because the bank, when you earn 3,501, cannot give you a mortgage bond. Even when you earn 7,000, it's very risky. They take you as a risk. So we've negotiated with the banks, in partnership with the banks, that government will provide the initial subsidy which will go towards the deposit. But the person must go and negotiate with the bank for a mortgage bond. The actual house value should be below 300,000. So which means that you can go, if you qualify, you can go to a bank and say, I've earned too much, I would like to get into the program, which is called Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program. But for 3,500 downwards, government provides subsidy. So if there is a case where a house was partially constructed, someone who qualifies might apply for a subsidy, whatever subsidy, perhaps that would assist towards the completion of the house. But it depends on the individual's situation. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this has been a very fruitful, interaction. I just want to find out as to this thing that is bothering me. Can these people who own RDP houses, can a person sell that house? Because I have seen that happening, and it has also been appearing on papers that that there were certain people who were selling RDP. I just want to know that.
By law, they are not supposed to sell their houses for a certain period. Every 8 years, at the moment it's 8 years. Yes, 8 years. They have to keep that house for 8 years before they can dispose of it. 8 years, and that is yes.
But just to add, you see, it's very difficult to actually monitor, because these are your bedroom negotiations. They don't involve conveyancing. They don't involve any legal. They just meet in somewhere, and then the next day a house is sold. It's very difficult to monitor that. But we are trying to say, at least for this period, you don't sell it. But even if you want to sell it, the first person you offer it to is government. They are looking at ways of trying to stop our people from actually selling this house. But it's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult to stop the bedroom selling. But they, by law, they are not supposed to.
Maybe just to give a background to this. We had a problem of xenophobia about 5 years ago. And immediately after xenophobia, this came very sharply, that the houses are being occupied by foreigners or people who are not supposed to be there. That is when we conducted an occupancy audit, and it was found that, about one-third of our houses are in wrong hands. Not necessarily maybe foreigners, but there's a lot of movement and change. We conduct an occupancy audit every 2-3 years, just to check whether people are still there. And at the moment, we have not found the handle really to stabilize this. We still have people, you know, owning houses and moving and so on. When we do the audit, we knock and do the head count. And every time we found that at least one third of the people are not there, so what? We are waiting on the program, and we should find a solution soon. Yeah.
I think it does actually suggest that our government does not actually have a good system in place as yet, because it would guarantee that wrong people are, you know, sold RDP houses. Because I think RDP houses are meant for those people who cannot afford. And I don't think that kind of a person can sell that RDP even if it's after 8 years. So I think our systems really still lack, you know, in terms of ensuring that the right people access those RDP houses. Ma'am, I'm closing now. Mm. Is it a die question, comment? Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I think it is. You know, my worry is teachers are occupying these RDPs. And even the doctors that are staying in RDPs, they're occupying RDP houses. Doctors, they make these RDP houses their surgeries and so on. I would like to know from the department really what are they doing around that issue. Because, you know, the teachers that are disabled, they're not owning the RDPs. How do they go about? The teachers, I understand, they earn more than 2,500, but they are disabled and so on. Must they also go to the bank and make an arrangement of? But at the present moment, you can even go there. I will send you to Wallaston. Half of Wallaston, they are making these RDPs in plural association. When a person died, they will sell the house and go and bury that person. So that is the issue. So very difficult, really. And I think the department must take this up and make it its own baby. Thank you.
In fact, I think there is an ongoing discussion within MINMAC, where they are looking at, we even went as far as Brazil to go and try and see how does the system work, because they do have a similar system. They have a clause, so they have some thing they call the clawback clause. But it might not work. There, if you want to dispose of your house, you sell it to the government. But we say that you sell it for an amount which is equivalent to the subsidy. Now, that might not work, because the people who sell this house really don't have money. Yes, I know of cases where it's ridiculous cases. Somebody has a hangover. Once you buy a bottle of whatever, the pulp a day, then you sold the house. I mean, they are ridiculous houses. Because you see, the problem is that, which research is showing, when you give somebody a house free of charge, with nothing, people don't attach value. I'll tell you one thing about the BHP. Where people have put in their sweat equity, where people have built in their own houses, there are very few, in fact, if they are, very few instances where they sell their house. They will sell it through the correct legal processes. But where you give a person a free B. He has an he or she has an option. Sell this, go and put up your job. That's all. So there's that which we also as government need to look into, the entire grant system. Whether it is helping, the intentions were good, but the unintended consequences were suffering from them now. So you are correct, Chairperson, the systems are not as yet in place, but I think at a very high level, the Department of Business is trying to look at ways of stemming this process. If one third of the houses that we give to people, which is over the years, over 10 million, one third of that are not the correct beneficiary, then it's quite alarming. It's quite alarming. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We hope that you have given us some insight, onto the information that we did not possess. But we also hope that what you have actually committed yourself to, as to the outstanding, especially on the data, on the stats that were required by members, we will be able to have that. Unfortunately, we don't have much of time to be calling you to come and appear before us for us to have that information, but would really appreciate to have that information in writing. Let's say 2 weeks, honourable members, because the reason why we are doing this, we are going to consolidate a report out of all these interactions with the various departments, and I don't think any department would like to see itself in the report that reflects, inadequate information. So for that reason, we would really appreciate if you would do that. And we would also really appreciate to see you, to be visible in the roadshows, to bring awareness to that targeted group, which we are talking about, as we say that, those are mostly neglected by our society. And we hope that we will work together in, picking up their standards and restoring their dignity, as reflected in the UN Convention. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the honourable members as well. And the meeting is adjourned.
I was just thinking. Members, can we resume our meeting? Pardon? Okay. Honourable members, I think we all have our minutes in front of us. Do we have minutes? The minutes of the first attack. Do we have them? I can't proceed if you don't have them. Minutes of the first attack. First attack. What date? Yeah. 1st August, 8th August, and 21st August. So it says. Yes. Yeah, I three. Yeah, five, first and eighth. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Can we look at the first August? Minutes, as we know, honourable members, I think we should take our minutes very seriously. Although I do know that we only received them when? You only received them yesterday, so we are not going to rush. We are going to go through each set of minutes, look at page one, see whether we agree, make corrections, any amendments before we adopt them. And not rush to adopt
unless you had actually, you know, certified yourself with. So the best of August, page 1. Yes. Page 1, first August. Page 2. Can we ask one member to read page 2 under page 2.1. Can we have one member reading? We are going to do this with all the members.
The chairperson opened the meeting and welcomed all members and the delegation to the meeting. Mrs. Moriti, Mrs. Ngomalo ANC, and Mrs. Van der Merwe IFP tendered apologies. Should I go on?
Hold for a minute. Show on it.
Okay, but the minute of the first, as we received this long time ago. This was given to us very, very long time ago because our work through, the only ones I did work through are the ones that we received now, yesterday or today, this morning in my kitchen.
I think you're right, but how many members have read it? Because we can't really go through minutes when, over the minutes when others have not read the minutes.
Okay,
and any questions on page 2?
Can you ask a question for us now?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a question on page 2, please. And I think I followed the question the last time, but I did no reply on this question or answer on this question. Remember a conference for the rights of people with disabilities that went abroad. I wanted to know what the delegation looked like party-wise. Because when I counted, it was MEC, it was chairs, subcommittees, and in our committee, it was only ANC members. Not that I want to go with, I only want to know if it is parliamentary delegation by only a one-party type of thing. And I'm asking that, not to cause a stir or problem, but I would like to have an answer to that. And on that very same page, our country report, perhaps I might be wrong, I wanted to know how the country report was together. The country report came from the public hearings we had, or did departments also do their oversight, monitoring, and implementation to complete the country report? I didn't see the report as yet because it's not completed. I'd just like to know how it was put together. Was it put together only by the public hearings this committee has, or is there any other way that they go about putting this country report together? That's on page 2.
Okay, let me respond to the first question about the delegation. I think the delegation was not a parliamentary delegation. The deputy minister selected chairpersons on the themes that we're going to deliberate on in New York. And as to those who were only ANC members, I think I did respond to that. Because I referred the honorable member to her whippers, where they can discuss it. But as to how they were invited, what I know is that they were selected by the deputy minister according to the themes that were going to be presented. And then
can I just ask another question on that one? If it was not the parliamentary delegation, who paid for the delegation that went from Parliament? If it was not a parliamentary delegation,
honourable member, the deputy, the ministers
they have prerogative to invite anyone from Parliament. It's Parliament that is. And in this instance, I don't think all those who were invited were granted permission. They were all refused permission by the Speaker, and only one delegate from this committee was allowed by the Speaker, which was then from our committee. But as for all other delegates, they were refused permission by the Speaker. I will ask the researchers to respond to the as to the how this was compiled.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the country report, our public hearings focused on engagement with civil society and NGOs and all else to look at how far the country is coming implementing the convention. Our ministry is responsible for putting together the country report based on inputs from all government departments and any other sectors that help understand how far the country can be implementing the convention. What the minister, deputy minister and the minister indicated to us, when they gave the briefing, I think by then, which was 2 months ago, probably about 50 to 60% of departments actually submitted. Since 2007, this is what they put into place. So there were a number of outstanding departments that still needed to give them information. The agreement was that they were going to once more follow up with departments who haven't submitted, but they were going to hand over to Cabinet a country report probably by November, because the intention is to submit to the United Nations in December. And they've given the committee the authority that before it goes off to the United Nations, we will get a briefing by them and input on the country report. In actual fact, our public hearings is parliamentary oversight in relation to international treaties. Yes, our ministry was present, and some of the issues they have taken up, they take a heed of, and what we're engaging with now is doing parliamentary oversight in terms of follow-up from the executive. So the intention is when we get the country report from the ministry, we're able to look at what the government departments responded to be, and then look at our own process, and in terms of the findings we come up with, and see what are the things that are similar, where are the gaps, and where are the things that are different, and gauge on why that is. Thank you.
But I want us to move, because I want us to understand how we deal with minutes. Our role here as the committee is to collect and amend minutes. Whatever questions we have, we must reserve them
for that particular minister to engage that minister if we have not received any responses. But if we are not, if we are going to do what we are doing now, we are not going to be able to do our work. Because my understanding is that we have to correct, amend, you know, and not ask questions that are not directed to us. Put them aside, and then you will put those questions again to the department when they appear before us. Are we agreeable on that? Okay, can we move? Who are you asking, an honorable member? Who are you asking? No, I thought, okay, I thought maybe those are questions that are pertaining. Okay, can, are we agreeable on these minutes? Can we have a mover? And
thank you, Chairperson. I so move.
And honorable pause. Okay, can we move to the second step, which is the 8th of August, page 1. If you were present, if you were not there, can we move to page? Member, pause.
From the SABC or from the South African Sign Language Board.
Thank you.
Member Pong?
I move.
Move for adoption?
For adoption, yes.
And seconder? Member Seko seconder? Member corrected. The department had in Bezos and participated its last time Bezos. Also, Chairperson, sorry. Just on the blog where it says on distribution of information, the department's information was distributed through schools, and then it says non-governmental organization. It must be organizations, NGOs.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it refers to one specific organization.
Due to time constraints, the department was requested to respond in writing to other questions that were not responded to. Did the department respond?
No, they have not responded yet. Make a follow-up. The other thing, honourable members, is that if there are outstanding, you know, issues that department has not responded to, you are at liberty in a house to raise it with that department. We are free to do that because, you know, not each and every issue that we are able to track, you know. Some get lost on the way. So it is our responsibilities as well, if they don't do that, to raise it to the house, you know, either in a form of question or statement.
Jay, can I come in there, please? I don't want to say anything any further. But if the departments come in front of this committee and promise this committee that they will come back on info that they cannot give us immediately, we as a committee will have to be very serious to keep them to what they said. Otherwise, we are over useless. They need to at least reply to the questions that they cannot answer immediately. That is our duty as a committee to see that they reply and that it is circulated among the members. Besides the questions that we ask in Parliament, or even go to the media or whatever we want to do. If they come here, otherwise, what's the use of them coming for the committee, not being able to supply us with info, and when we ask questions on this, we are told what you are telling us now. They still have an obligation towards us to supply us with the questions that we ask, the answer.
Okay, you are right. I don't think we can really dispute what you are saying. It's very much right. It is our duty to make sure that they provide us with that information.
I just want to understand it properly. Like I think to me it's not complete. Like when you say they have to provide us with the information. Let's say as a committee, as we are sitting here, who is supposed to have a follow-up of the things which are not provided? I just want clarity on that.
Because they have promised or they will send it to us in writing. The office is supposed to do that. The office, the secretary, she's supposed to make a follow-up. And you have a right to raise these things in the meeting to say, where are we in terms of the information that we're supposed to receive from the department? You can do that in each and every meeting. You can do that. It's your responsibility to ensure that the department, but then the secretary as well, she must bring letters to us that shows, or internet that shows, that proves that she did make a follow-up. Please note that down there. Because also we cannot rely on, you know, verbal information. Honourable, move for adoption. Any seconder? Member Paulson, second. Thank you.
sorry, Mela. The letter that was requested from the Department of Basic Education as to the reasons why the senior officials, the deputy, the DG, and other senior officials were not present in the meeting, and they were requested to to submit the letter and the explanation as to why they were not here before the end of the meeting. They did email that letter the following day. So I do have it. I just want to inform them.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I really appreciate of what Secretary has said, but the Department of Education, remember that we sent them back because they were giving us the wrong information, which was not corresponding from the flat and the document. My problem is they didn't give them a time frame that when do you expect them to come, or are they waiting for us to invite them? Hence, they didn't present us with document. Maybe, again, the Secretary, some of the resolution, those the resolutions need a follow-up. You should catch up in a sense that after that you can make a follow-up in terms of writing the letter and so on. Is that my concern?
Honourable Member, they did come back. Basic Education came before this committee together with Higher Education. And I was told that because I was not here, I think the meeting was chaired by the whip. I was told that it was poorly attended, but they did.
No,
apologies.
Okay.
Thank you. No problem.
I remember. Chairperson, then that will mean in our attendance register, the fact page, if it was poorly attended, I don't think I was part of this committee the day of the when they came back, because I was there when they sent. So I was not present. I will be registered. I think I forward my apology for the meeting. Is it that one?
Mm-hmm.
Is not that one?
You were here on the 22nd, and they came on the following week, I think the 4th, the meeting that in fact never took place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I'll move for the adoption of the minutes.
Second.
Thank you.
I just want clarity, or maybe I'll be a little bit irrelevant. With due respect, I want explanation. Are we supposed to have, like when we say a meeting, PC meeting, are we supposed to have meeting with any number of members? Even if, let's say for instance, we form a quorum, what is called a quorum. Even if we don't correct, are we allowed? Yes. Are we allowed to have a meeting even if we don't correct?
Yes.
In terms of our portfolio committee.
Mm-hmm.
I first want to generalize, then I'll tell you which one. Okay, I'm referring to this. Is it the 28th?
Chairperson, can I just add to that? I think you're correct on that, because I think the parliamentary rule states that once a committee is requested to make a decision or a vote on a topic, a quorum is required. But I think when it's a briefing by a department, a quorum is not required, as far as I understand, Chairperson.
Thank you. That's okay what I want. We have to know.
Nothing wrong in you asking that. I think we all need to understand. We can't dissolve immediately, you know, no members are here. You know, we continue as long as honorable member has also explained it.
Yes, sir.
Twelve away, supposed to be 2011. I think you're right.
December. And submitted in December 2011. She's right.
Annoyed, I'm sorry. You know, we have, as members, we have a tendency of peering without listening, you know, and that will stop us from asking questions. Because we query a person not understanding actually what she said or what she is. No, but I'm referring to certain members. If they can also, if they can give us a chance, if they know it's fine, they'll explain it to us. But not when you are answering and then you have an impression of thinking that you are doing the wrong thing. You see, they should first listen to the question and correct the member, but not just querying in the interim of the question. I don't think that's acceptable. It's totally, totally unacceptable, Chair. We have to give one another a chance. Even if you talk rubbish, just listen to the rubbish and to wait for that person and tell that person that you're talking rubbish.
I want to agree. Let us not debate this. I think we must be tolerant, okay? Because it's like howling, you know, which is not allowed in a meeting. Even if you don't agree with a person, you leave that person to say whatever she is saying, and then you get the opportunity to respond. Are you on the same message?
No, I don't know. I'm not on the same message.
Okay.
I think I want to make it clear here, you said it's December 24th. You are not you said make it right, because it's the 24th year on the 4th. And it's supposed to be 2011.
Yeah.
I think Menopolis was referring to the top, the 2011, 24th expenditure to arrive, but not the performance. The 24th December. Yes. Thank you, sir.
For adoption with correction, Chairperson.
I will say, Chairperson. Lighter point, I wanted to apologize to members for not being here the last 2 weeks. My other portfolio committee was seized with the appointment for the SABC board and also the Encounter board, so I want to apologize to members for not being around. It's not my intention not to attend meetings. And also, thank you. I just want to say that. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the hospital.